Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. We are doing our part here, helping pet parents see an alternative way to feed, see that maybe there's some things going on out there in the health industry that aren't as good for your pets as maybe you have been told. That's why I always love to have my top authority figure. That is Dr. Judy Jasik. How are you today?
I'm good. Well, I don't know about that, but I got a lot of years of experience. And you know, when I talk from my own experience and, well, you know, things I've seen with my own eyes and results I've seen. And for me, that's the only evidence I need to make recommendations. I see pets get healthier, and that's I'm gonna encourage more people to go those directions. Thing, you know, for people that are, you know, hesitant about raw, like they're not sure, you know, just try it for a month. You know, just you're not sure, just instead of debating it back and forth in your mind, why not just give it a shot and see what you notice? And I would bet that, you know, by far the majority of times you're gonna see improvements in your pet's health.
So yesterday I posted on Facebook the pet cancer series, and they were actually allowing you to see all 7 episodes free. So if you guys didn't get that, I'm sorry, but the entire series is 78% off right now. And we do have a lot of people that are like, oh my God, they'll watch Pet Fooled. Hopefully that's still out there and hadn't been pulled. But Pet Fooled, and also the Pet Cancer Series. And hot topic right now, vaccines, right? And we don't see that people either know the questions to ask or have the cojones to ask their vets. Okay, and let me give you an example. So I had a customer call me and ask me, And we had this conversation, and she said, I just got back from the vet. We had a round of rabies shots, and we did this, and we did that. And her question was, I need to know how much mercury is in sardines. I said, in sardines. Well, first of all, these are not bottom feeders. Little fish typically are eaten by bigger fish. They're not in the ocean that long. We don't get our sardines from areas where they've had high levels of mercury, okay? But I asked the question, do you know if the vaccines or the rabies shot that you just gave your dog contained mercury? I have no idea. I said, you didn't ask your vet? No. Your vet didn't tell you it had mercury in it? No.
Right. Right. Because that's the information that's out there. You know, people, the whole thing about mercury and vaccines, that just doesn't get publicized. Nobody talks about that. The companies making the vaccines, you know, don't want that information to come out. So it doesn't, but there's information out there about, you know, sardines and this, you know, fresh food containing these heavy metals. You know, it's like, good God, what do you think is in kibble that you feed your dogs? Like, it could be anything more toxic to feed your dog than a kibble diet. But then we, you know, the fresh food ingredients get picked apart, and, you know, could there be some mercury in the fish? Sure. You know, there's a lot of contamination out there, but we do the best we can, and we're still going to be feeding a way less toxic diet than feeding something highly processed like a kibble diet.
Well, another customer, and we get obviously a lot of information from our customers, and I always want to ask, give me the sequence of what has happened, because it helps us to help more pet parents. So this particular customer had a puppy. of which they took the puppy in to get his distemper, Bordetello, and Lepto on the same day. On that same day, they were on a Life's Abundance nutritional kibble diet. On that day that he got the distemper, Bordetello, and Lepto, they switched over to raw. Next morning, puppy is lethargic, not very active. And then he began to vomit all of his food, didn't want to eat, had watery diarrhea. So, but they take this dog to the vet because they said he had blood in his stool. Now, understand that 2 days ago, he had the lepto, the distemper, the Bordetello all on the same day, right? Mm-hmm. They take him to the vet. The vet says, okay, we're going to do, he was diagnosed with Giardia and Coccidia. But here's what they told him to do. Get off raw, start feeding kibble. And they suggested that he go on Origin large breed puppy kibble. And they gave metronidazole and Albon for Giardia and Coccidia. Now, that seems like an awful lot of stuff when I would have probably taken a look at that and said, wow, that's some pretty heavy duty vaccines that all just went in at one time. Certainly the lepto being one of the most frightening for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I see so many inflammatory reactions after that lepto vaccine. I mean, I haven't used it myself in years as a practitioner because I don't see, proven efficacy that it really works, that there's enough of a risk to warrant the side effects. And I also know that if you keep your dog healthy, have them on a raw diet with a healthy gut, healthy immune system, and they do get exposed, there's a good chance their immune system is going to be able to handle it and eliminate the microorganism. We don't need to be doing the vaccines, but yeah, absolutely. I don't know why, and this is just so common in the veterinary industry, that vaccines just get completely overlooked as a cause for disease. You give all of these vaccines at one time and it overactivates, overstimulates the immune system. It just makes it reactive. And, I tell people every pet has sort of a weak link in their body. They have the system that is going to be affected first. Some pets, it's going to be the gut. Some it's going to be, the skin, or they'll get itchy ears, or if they're prone to autoimmune disease, we could see a flare up there, and you're going to see the flare up. That's why there's lots and lots of different symptoms that can show up post-vaccine. It's not like, oh, you give this shot and you're going to get this symptom. Every pet kind of has that weak link in their body, but I see it all the time. And we look at this in my practice because we work with a lot of chronically ill pets and a lot of cancer patients. I can't tell you how many times we see like a newly diagnosed cancer patient, and within 6 months prior to that diagnosis, they just had a big round of vaccines. Now, can I prove that causes it? And it's probably not the only cause, but I do think it causes that tipping point where it's just like the body might be kind of keeping something under control and it's maintaining, and then you just wallop them with all of these vaccines and it just throws the immune system for a loop. So something that's there at the surface ready to take hold then is able to take hold. And I've seen it so many times that I just know there's a correlation there.
Well, I always try to get my pet parents to think like this. Draw a line down the piece of paper. On this side, list out all the vaccines and medications that have toxins, adjuvants, mercury, all these things in it. Now list out the pure raw food on the other side. Now I want you to look at that objectively and ask yourself, which one of these is most likely to be causing issues? Which one? I just don't I just don't know why that the vaccine issue in pets has been so compartmentalized in people, or why the thought that my pet is sick, I've got cancer, I've got some sort of chronic disease, and this vaccine is going to help it. I cannot make that leap. I don't even help me. Why, yeah. Why would you do that?
It makes no sense to me. No sense. And I think the paradigm in the veterinary profession is that vaccines are benign and that they don't do any harm. Cause I've seen this, like pets will come in with symptoms and sometimes so sick that I will send them in to a specialist. I remember one time seeing a pet with a vestibular disease where dogs are, you know, they're wobbly and they, you know, their orientation is off, so they're not balanced. And I sent them into, this dog could like hardly stand. And so I sent them into the neurologist and like, we need to get a neural workup on this dog. And this dog had just had a round of vaccines. Like, I really felt that the vaccines were contributing. And, you know, and they go in and they're told that, well, they don't know what causes, it's idiopathic. Idiopathic is a word that means nobody knows where it comes from. It's just a big word for, instead of the doctor saying, well, we don't know, it's idiopathic. It just means they don't know what caused it. But they know 100% certainty that it was not the vaccines. So how can that be? How can you say you don't know what caused it, but you're 100% certain that it was not the vaccines? And when the timing is there, that they just had the vaccination. So that is the popular way of thinking in veterinary medicine. And it baffles me, because how can an intelligent, scientifically oriented person like a veterinarian, you have a lot of, you know, science and medical background, you go through a lot of schools, so these are very intelligent people, not even look at this correlation. And you look at how cancer rates just keep going up and up and up, and there's no willingness to change the point of view on where is this coming from? Because that's the first thing I look at. I mean, I take detailed histories and I dig into everything. You know, what medications, what vaccines, what's the diet been like? What are environmental exposures? Because I want to know where this is coming from, because then I can subsequently educate people on how to prevent it. And I find these trends all the time. Kibble diet is a big one. Not always, but most pets have been on kibble diets, lots of vaccines, you know, flea and tick, other chemicals, all these other preventatives that people are told, oh, they need to be on year round, have to be on year round heartworm, which is ridiculous. So we're constantly bombarding these poor pets with all of these chemicals, and their bodies continually struggling to detoxify from them. And then you wallop them with their annual vaccine boosters, which aren't even medically necessary because the dog priority has plenty of immunity. And then we wonder where the, you know, cancer comes from. I don't wonder anymore. I know in most cases I can pinpoint exactly what the cause was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's scary. The cancer rate just keeps climbing. It is not declining. All right, so I want to ask you about cyst on dogs. So let's say, and this is coming from my best friend in Oklahoma. So she sent me a picture the other day of her dog, and this is a senior dog now, but the dog had a cyst on its back in the area of which her father used to give this dog vaccines. Mm-hmm. Vaccine, because I said, it looks like this is in the exact spot where people do the flea and tick, where liquid version. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's going on in that particular area? And she said, well, this is where, you know, my dad used to give my dog vaccine. She decided that she needed to have it looked at by a vet. A vet cut this cyst open, supposedly to let it drain. That was 9 months ago, somewhere around in there. And the cyst now will not heal. It keeps crusting over, opening back up, crusting over, opening back up. Now, if you have a cyst on a dog, would your recommendation be to open it up so it can drain?
No. I mean, if I was going to do something, I would remove it. I mean, I wouldn't just open it up. Like you do, like, it's kind of like an all or nothing thing. You either, you know, let it, you know, cause so there are some skin cysts that are benign that'll fill up and they'll break and drain, and they're going to continue doing this unless they're removed. But yeah, if you just open it up, then you're just going to create an open sore most likely. Like, and that's exactly what happened with your friend's dog. I might drain it. I've had some where like they just get like a thinner fluid in it, and I might drain it like just with a needle, but I wouldn't like open it up and leave it open because it's not normal tissue. You know, the cyst is not normal skin tissue, so it's not going to heal like normal skin, and it has this predisposition for draining. So yeah, if you open it up, you're just going to end up with a chronic sore, and probably it's not likely to heal unless they now go in and just remove the whole thing.
Well, which she did say, we are scheduled to go in and remove it. Do you advise that to now go in? And it's, you know, another $700 charge, obviously, but to go in and take this cyst out?
If it's a chronic sore that won't heal, I would be inclined to remove it because it's, you know, that could be a source of infection, and, you know, obviously it's, I'm sure, not appealing cosmetically, which isn't the biggest issue, but if it's a kind of a big reactive sore like that, that's not healing, and if they've tried to get it to heal, then probably removing it would be a good thing. Now, when it comes to like tumors, like masses, like little lumps and bumps that pop up, now I don't recommend removing every little lump and bump that comes up. Matter of fact, I discourage that. But if we have a big open draining sore and it can be removed, I probably would remove it, as long as they've made attempts to heal it and it's not, you know, and it's obviously not healing on its own.
Gotcha. All right. So another question that came up, and I have not heard this one before. Obviously you have, but if a dog goes in, a female, and gets spayed. There was a dog that was 2 years old, or is 2 years old, was spayed. After the spay, they notice that pee droplets are constantly coming out. So the dog was prescribed estrogen to help with this incontinence. What would you say about that?
Well, first of all, that can happen. We see that in spayed female dogs, usually not right after the spay. Usually it's something we see a little bit later in life, and they will be incontinent. The typical thing is where they'll like just be laying down and they get all relaxed, and then they just like pee their bed. And it, you know, it can be problematic if you have a big dog and it's a lot of urine. They just like literally will just, everything just relaxes and all the urine comes out of the bladder, but it can be due to low estrogen. So supplementing with estrogen can help. Now you would still want to rule out any other contributing factors, like make sure that there's not a urine infection. So you would check a UA, make sure that the dog is normal neurologically. So in older dogs, you know, we'll see that get weak in the hind end, things like that. They'll get a neurologic type of incontinence where, you know, the nerves are just weak and they're just not functioning as well. And so, you know, they'll get an incontinence for that reason. And that could be both urinary and fecal incontinence. So you want to make sure that there's no contributing factors like that. And then I also look at the volume. Like if it's a few drips like that, there are some herbs that can help, that can just help kind of tone things up and help prevent that, you know, the few little droplets of urine, if that's what it is. If it's large volumes, then I feel like the estrogen, and it then they respond to the estrogen. I mean, sometimes you just need to try the estrogen and see if it works. If they respond to the estrogen, I feel like I'd rather do that than some other. There are other pharmaceuticals that are used. The most common one is Proin, which is phenylpropanolamine, which is actually an antihistamine type drug that also will work. But again, it's a pharmaceutical. You have to give it twice a day. And it's, you know, lifelong if the dog has this incontinence and you can't get it to clear up by, you know, identifying other causes and maybe trying some herbs, then it's going to be lifelong. And so there's potential for side effects from that particular medication. The estrogen usually can be given once or twice a week. And if that's enough to just boost that estrogen level up a little bit, and if it resolves the problem, I feel like at least we're getting to the cause. You know, we're treating, if they respond to the estrogen, then the incontinence is likely due to the low estrogen. I think it's also a bigger issue in pets that are spayed too young. I actually don't think, you know, you asked me this question and I'm like, you know, I don't really see that very much anymore. I used to see it all the time, but mm-hmm. I think it's because first of all, my patients are on better diets and we minimize vaccines, all these things that can cause problems. But I also, for, you know, a number of years now, I've been encouraging waiting to spay or neuter pets until they're at least a year old. So they're more mature. Sometimes people get dogs from the rescue. They don't have control over that. But I think that's probably a big factor, because I got thinking, boy, I used to see that all the time. I don't really see that anymore. So I think just better health can help prevent it as well.
Yeah. So Lazi will be 2 in September. We're probably going to wait until she's at least 3. We're going to go another year. And I get it. When your dog goes into heat, it is not fun. I mean, Rick bought her the cutest panties in every color. They're awesome. There's some that you can just pop into the washer for sure. But if you're not watching and you got these panties on your dog, right, you got to put their tail through the little hole and then they come up and they have the Velcro. And she has all the cheetah and the pink cheetah and the, I mean, you know, it's his dog. I love her. She's a great dog, but I mean, that's his girl. But if you're not watching her, she can poop her pants. And she did it many times. Peed in her diaper, pooped in her diaper, because she knows she's running outside and she, you know, as dogs do. So it can be a little bit of a hassle where you're just about to pull your hair out. But I think she looks great, and I want to make sure that, you know, she's gotten all of the growth hormones that she needs and all of the stuff. So I don't, you know, there's a trade-off for sure for waiting, but I do, Dr. Jasek, I will see really young puppies going in to get spayed or neutered, and I'm just like, that, who is advising on that? That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me either. I mean, I know they do those, and they do that a lot in the rescues, because they're, you know, they see all of the unwanted pets and they're trying to reduce pet populations. So they want to make sure that these pets never have an opportunity to breed. So I understand that point of view. However, when you're also setting the pet up for a number of chronic illnesses, that's not in the best interest of the pet either. So I think we need to, you know, create a balance. We need to educate people. You know, maybe they'd have a program where they could check back in. I know sometimes they will charge like an extra deposit that people get back when they, you know, if they want to wait, then once they get the pet spayed or neutered, then they will get that, you know, get that money back. So people are on the hook for something. But I think there's no question anymore that the early spay and neuter is really detrimental to the pets. And you know what, if you don't have patience for like a couple of heat cycles, what if you're setting your pet up for lifelong disease? You know, are you going to have patience for that? You know, that's way more time consuming and emotionally draining. You know, at least you're helping to create, you're making an investment in creating a healthy life for your pet. Because this is a large part of my practice is helping people with pets with chronic illness. And not only is it expensive, it's heartbreaking. So think about what you're preventing by doing that. And, you know, I mean, come on, you could be a little bit inconvenienced for a few weeks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you love them, somebody asked me the other day, they said, well, we're thinking about going raw, but I don't know. And I said, well, if you really love your pets, then you're going to want to go raw. If you just kind of like them, yeah, just keep going down the same path you're going down. Some people don't appreciate that comment, but that's okay, because here it is. When one side, guys, listen to this. When one side can effectively stifle the views of the other, that is not democracy. It's tyranny. And so we want to be able to express all of our thoughts out there, because the question becomes, who gets to decide which thoughts are allowed and which aren't? So come on now. Let's have both sides of the discussion going on.
And, you know, we don't have any, you know, agenda. I was talking to my husband, Chris, about this. And I said, you know, when I tell people not to vaccinate as much, it, you know, builds, you know, a level of trust, because I'm not trying to sell something. It's like, what agenda could I possibly have besides the truth and what I'm seeing in practice to tell people not to vaccinate their pets? I could make money selling vaccines. And in, like we've talked about, Didi, it'd be way easier to just go with the flow and do what everybody else is recommending and not feel like I'm constantly swimming upstream. But I'm interested in the health of the pets, and I want pets to be healthier. And I see this correlation between vaccines and disease over and over and over and over again. So when I'm telling somebody that I don't think vaccinating is in the best interest of their health, there's no possible agenda I could have in telling them that, you know, like I'm trying to keep their pets healthier so they don't even have to come in and see me as much, and I'm not selling them anything. So what possible agenda could I have besides I truly believe that's the truth and that's in the best interest of the health of the pets. And that's where I operate from. And if people don't like those opinions and those points of view I put out there, well, then they can choose to go elsewhere and choose other routes. But that's where I'm coming from.
Well, the optimal word there is choose, right? They're getting to choose. But you said, if I'm, you know, offending, I will tell you this, that there was a survey, Dr. JC, a 2019 survey on the First Amendment. And almost half of the respondents to this survey, actually 46%, said they are willing to shut down a speaker or a public institution if the appearance would be likely to offend. Likely to offend. And so that is quite frightening. As I think about the industry that I'm in, the industry that you're in, what would happen to some of these people's pets if, in fact, they didn't have access to the information of which we're putting out there? I've had many, many customers come to me with the advice from the veterinarians that their dog has a certain case of EPI or digestive orders that they are never going to recover from, and therefore they should put down their pets. These folks have come over here and said, what do you think? I said, I think you just need to first remove the offending foods. Don't put your pet down. Wait. These pets are healthy, thriving pets today. So the question is, what would happen? Where would the health of your pet be if you did not have access to this information because someone decided that it offends them?
Right. And what happened to free speech and, like, you know, and healthy debate? So people get, you know, just because somebody's going to get their feelings hurt, we can't present information, you know. It should be that we can all present our points of view, and let's have a healthy debate. Let's you know, bring your point of view and I'll bring my point of view, and let's hash it out. Let's share experiences and you know, see what we can come up with. But it seems like there's a status quo of information and information that goes counter to that you know, can be these days can be squashed, can be taken down. So information can and is manipulated. And yeah, so you need to remember that.
I see this when you're discussing politics, when you discuss religion, when you discuss anything, as we've talked about before, when you hold a belief. I always look at it and say, what is causing the agitation to the point that you want to call people names, you want to make them look crazy, you want to take them down? What is that? Because if you are really firm in your belief and you have every confidence, for instance, I have every confidence that raw dog food is healthier than kibble. So when somebody comes over and wants to say that their kibble is perfectly fine, I say, okay. I don't get all up in arms and try to make them sound crazy. If they ask me for my opinion, I'll give it. But if they don't, that's fine. That's fine. Go feed kibble. Do what you want to do, because that is the freedom that you have. But I don't need to try to cancel that person in life because I have a belief that it scares me so bad that they believe a certain way. And this is the question that I have. What is causing the fear? What is causing that fear? If you have a true belief in something and somebody has a different belief, who cares? Does it really matter? And I think that where people are starting to blur the lines is saying what you believe is going to severely hurt me. But if you look at what you and I are saying, we're not advocating things like the vaccines in dogs and over vaccinations and toxins. So which one will cause disease more? What we're advocating or what somebody else is advocating?
Right. Hey, I think that's a really good point. Like, I don't feel, you know, like, I agree. If somebody doesn't agree with what I think, then, you know, keep doing what you're doing if it's working so well for you. Like, I will share what I think, but I don't feel threatened. It, you know, it's like if people, and to me, it indicates that people are not that strong in their beliefs. They're following the mainstream. They're following what everybody else is doing. And so they're sticking with what's most popular and what they're hearing on the news and what they're hearing most people talk about, because it's comfortable to be, you know, in the, you know, with the majority rather than speaking up or taking a viewpoint that's, you know, that's more of a minority viewpoint. That's a little scary, you know, and it gets kind of lonely. You know, I feel that way sometimes, like, geez, I feel like I'm bucking the whole profession sometimes, but I believe firmly in what I'm doing. And I don't feel threatened by somebody else's belief. So I think if people, if they don't feel strongly enough about their beliefs, then yeah, they're going to feel more threatened by another opinion because they don't know how to stand their ground. They don't have enough evidence really to stand their ground. They're just doing what's popular and they're not really and truly thinking for themselves, because if they were, they would stand firm. And then, yeah, you feel good about what you believe and people can believe what they want. You can respect each other's beliefs. There's no reason why you can't get along with somebody that's got a slightly different belief. But yeah, I think when people get that threatened, I think they're just not firm in what they believe.
Right. Right. So most of the time people are coming to us because something isn't working for their pets. And, you know, we're going to help you figure out a different way to go, a way that we have seen that has proven to increase health benefits over and over and over again. But as we said, there's no pet police yet. Yet. I mean, I don't know what's coming, but there might be. But you still have the freedom to choose and do what you want to do. If you'd like to work with Dr. Judy Jasek, you know what, the other day I was thinking, Dr. Jasek, I was in my head, I was calling you Dr. JJ. Dr. JJ. Judy Jasek. Dr. JJ? Yeah. I like that.
You can tell me. I could certainly be called worse things. So it's all right.
Dr. JJ, if you would like to work with Dr. Judy Jasek, J-A-S-E-K, she is available at aapplevet.com. AnimalHealingArtsVet.com. Did I say that right, Dr. Jason?
Yeah, you got it.
Oh, finally. Right. Thank goodness. And if you would like to start your dog on a species-appropriate diet, well, you know, here at Raw Dog Food and Company, your pet's health is our business. So you can find us at rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble. We'll see you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.